this is a book of a life, let's say. I was working at the Portman Clinic for 30 years, from 71. And before that, I was working in the therapeutic community, the first one, sadly closed 2 years ago, Henderson Hospital, also with delinquent criminal behavior. Well, then I was challenged, really, in my work at the board by my male colleagues. They all say, this was about my first book, they all said, of course, I mean, don't be silly, Stella, women cannot have perversions because they don't have a penis. So if they don't have a penis, they cannot have perversions. So it seemed to me that the theoretical input was a little bit limited, just to see women as exactly the same as men, but without a penis, if you see what I mean. Also, in a way, what they want, the one who gave me the awareness of the equation, baby and penis, was Sigmund Freud, by saying that the little girls, they can then conquer the Oedipus conflict when they dream, or when they have the fantasy about having daddy's baby inside themselves. So therefore, I thought, okay, just a minute. They don't have penis, but they have the power to become mothers. And then the idea was very interesting about this title, Mother Madonna Whore, because I think when people think about penis, they think about sex. When the woman is pregnant, they don't see any sex. They see only motherhood. So therefore, it's the glorification of motherhood is being made tacitly and immediately. When Freud talks about the dark continent of female sexuality, it seems to me that when the women are pregnant, it is quite obvious that they have had sex in order to be pregnant. Well, nowadays it's different. But anyway, in those days, you had to have sex in order to be pregnant. But then, as soon as a woman is pregnant, immediately the idea is all to do with motherhood and nothing to do with perversion. Now, I was here because of the amount of men that we saw at the Portman, still are there, in a sort of outpatient basis. So there were far more men than women. And the fact is that the men, they were talking about terrible things that they were taking place in their childhood with their mothers. And then the few women I began to see, then I had the group, every time that they did want to talk about those horrid, bizarre feelings about their children, nobody would listen to them. So not only did they have a voice, but they didn't have a hearing either. So what happens then is that if a woman in a group said, well, sometimes I feel like killing my child, a man sitting next to her who, for all what I know, was extremely violent, he had raped several women, he would say, oh, don't be silly. Darling, don't be silly. You would die without your child. You adore your child. So they were stopped. They were shut up. Effectively so. No, they're not to talk anymore. So I began to have then a look at the women and the men and to see what was going on in those first few years of infancy, in which, of course, babies are very much at the mercy of their mothers, psychologically, biologically, any aspect, in every aspect. So, the women in becoming mothers have an enormous power. The problem is that sometimes this is backfires, because I'm sure you are aware about young girls who say, I would love to have a baby to have somebody who loves me. And the little awareness that they have that when the baby is born will have enormous amount of his or her own demands, dredges and all that, so they feel really, they feel cheated in their expectations. So then, from having this power, then becomes the moment in which they are completely devoid of power, they are powerless. There's a chair here, there are two chairs here, completely devoid of power, and they start feeling very, very idle, uncontainable within themselves, within their rage in themselves, and they may feel like really doing something to the child, because the child is not behaving according to their own expectations. Also, it seems to me that the for example, let's take domestic violence. Domestic violence, the woman then is very much, no, I'm not talking about women who go out to work, some of them too, mind you, but I'm talking about people who are really housebound because they don't have anybody to take care of the children. So therefore, perhaps the husband then gets very angry, whatever reason, she's got the power, the domestic power, but men, they have the social power, the power outside. So therefore, when this takes place, the man may just harm the female partner in different ways, and humiliating, and doing terrible things to the woman. Why is it so difficult to imagine that if somebody has been in the situation of being a victim of violence, why is it so difficult to believe that then they will become also in identification with the aggressor? And they will do exactly the same to the wicked person when they are being left alone with the children. Why is it so difficult for us to imagine that? I mean, and to be able to understand women better. We don't want women to be that way. We don't want to. We want women to behave themselves very nicely and to shut up. So I began then to collect a lot of research about this, about many, many women, and that was the production of my book in 1988. This has been now going for 27 years. The book has never been out of print against any expectations I may have had. So, and it is something very rewarding too. There's far more now talking about this. There are much more facilities for women to appeal and to have help and to talk about all these tremendous problems. Now, so this was done then in 88, and then I began also, in 71 I began to do group therapy at the clinic, group analytical therapy. And I was involved, first of all, one of the unexpected outcomes I had with the book was that I still remember very vividly, went to Brighton to give a lecture, and a woman said to me, Gardner ad litem, this is the person who goes for the child cases and family cases, and is the one who has the paramount importance, is only the child. She couldn't care what's going on with the other people, it's the child. So it's very wonderful to work with these professions, because they have no sides about the husband or the wife. So, she said to me, well, I mean, you appear in court, you do assessments of maternal abilities. I said, no, I don't. I mean, I hate to be there, to be grilled by the QC. And she really made me feel very ashamed of myself. She said, you know, if you don't do it, who the hell is going to do it? So then I began also to do these terrible cases of evaluation of maternal abilities, which is really, it is a very, very difficult thing to do. I describe here in my last book, I describe a case that I had to do it. First of all, I developed with some members of my team, I developed a technique to do the parenting ability, to do the assessment. And this was to do with, she would do the mother, I would do the father, or the opposite way around. And then the child will be done by next door by the tabby also. And then we will have all the family together. And then we will have also the legal professions involved before we went to court. So it is required around 4 to 6 months. But then really we are doing a very, very thorough and very accurate job. You cannot do these sort of jobs. They say, you know, you are, in a way, you are fighting against the legal system. They want you to go very fast because the child, otherwise, you cannot do it. It is very fast because also you have to see how the relationship develops with either the father or the mother or the grandmother too sometimes, and the sibling. And then you are really you are well prepared to make a decision. Though, this is not an easy task either. So a case that was so very, very very difficult with a very young girl, and she really wanted very much to take care of the child, but she just was completely succumbed by this enormous rage and attacked the child in a very bad way. So I saw her over a period of time, and my colleague saw the partner, and then I just thought, she's really, psychologically speaking, she is not equipped to deal with this tremendous. I could see that she was a child. She was a child who wanted to be, that child was going to be very well taken care of, but at the same time, she was enraged most of the times too. And extremely, extremely sort of taxing the situation of wanting everything at once, exactly like a child herself. And I had to really to go into the direction that she would not be able to be. And she didn't want to have any therapy either. She was really stuck there. She wouldn't be able to have the child. Now, I found that myself is very, very hard and very difficult and very painful. So I was there, and I said, well, this fantastic exhibition of Giacometti at the Royal Academy. I said, myself, why don't I just want there to get out of this, to feed yourself with something nice and creative? And then, so I took the underground, I go there, and as soon as I get into this room, fill up with this Giacometti's sculpture, what did I do? Just something from nowhere took me to a sculpture, which is a mother with the arms open, and say it's called The Void. And I just saw my patient without the baby. And so, of course, I was immediately overtaken by emotions and sort of tears that came to me. So, in a way, it's a work. That's what I didn't want to do to start with, mind you. Because it's a work that is under your skin. You are taking with you all the time. They are not easy decisions. I think that the lawyers in question, they began to learn about the importance of the time being used to see how the relationship develops also with the therapist or with the other therapist. Another time we had, for example, a case of a mother. This is a Munchausen syndrome by proxy, which I think that this is different, because in the Munchausen syndrome by proxy, which is another chapter here about that, and I will tell you the case of this woman, there are three persons. What I see in the perversion of motherhood is the mother and the child, really. But in Munchausen syndrome by proxy, it is another person, which is the specialist. So in other words, could be the pediatrician, or could be the skin specialist, could be whatever, that the mother takes a child and persuades the specialist that this child is being sick by this or by that, by whatever fabrication is there, and the specialist is being taken by mother and absolutely agrees with her. Now, the most bizarre or serious case is a woman who comes, and it was so revealing in all different aspects. She comes to see me the first time with the dress very low, very low. I could see some, well, it was still the time of not there, or there. The tattoos, you know? Now everyone is wearing tattoos, but at that time it was quite, and it was a real tattoo. And she said, these are the names of my children, because I want them to come to the grave with me. And she had tattooed the names of the children. At the same time, why was she coming to Odin? She was coming because she had the second baby, and at the two of them, she had, sorry, but this is really awful. She was taking all the fingernails and the toenails, the first child and then the second child. And she had persuaded the skin specialist that it was a fungus infection. So she had gone to the a fantastic triumph for her to persuade this man that that was it, until somebody realized that this is not on. So it is also very interesting to see that all the butter child syndrome and all that has been actually discovered by pediatricians. Why taking care of the baby, not by psychologist or psychiatrist taking care of the mother. So it is a very... Now, in this case, I mean, they were too young. One was 3 and the other one was sort of like 10 months. And we wanted to be completely sure. With Judith Trauer, who was the consultant, consultant psychoanalyst at the Tavistock, we did the stranger sort of test, in which then the child, you are looking all the scene, you are looking for the dark window, the double window. One-way mirror, that's right. Or two-way mirror. Now, we look there. Now, the mother comes with the children. Then, a stranger appears. In this case, we had a young fellow who was a senior registrar. He was also with children, so he had a great capacity to engage with children. So then the mother is being told that she has to leave for a few minutes. The mother left. The children immediately attach themselves to this man, young man. Now, 10 minutes later, when they were completely engaged with him, the mother comes and to our surprise, but I mean, as soon as these two children saw this woman, they ran away as much as possible against where she was, as far as possible. So this was really quite an evidence of what was going on at home with the children, in case of an evidence was required. But as you can see, it's not easy work. Now, so then that was a sort of the perversion of motherhood, because in a way what I did is to have to put them together, men and women, but in the areas of reproductive functioning, as opposed to just sexuality. So in other words, you're going to see the penis as part of the reproductive function, and not just as, you know, as a sexual organ. And then you see the woman, also reproductive, she's far more widely spread, all the sexual, secondary sexual characteristics. So she's using the body. And let's say, for men, they have to do it outside against an object, such as, you know, okay, the usual case is the flasher, that then he has to go and to, you know, to look for some sort of woman who is either somewhere or another, and then uncovers himself, shows his penis to the woman, and expects a reaction from him. So, in order to see what was then the real situation with the woman, then in women they do it against themselves, against their own bodies. So all the eating disorders, for example, could be there. The perversion is very much a sort of characterized by a very compulsive, repetitive sort of cycle, a vicious cycle almost, no? In which there's a lot of sexual anxiety to start with. And then they know what they're doing is wrong, but they cannot help but having to do it. So, I mean, why this man who is happily married with children, and he's got a very important position in the European world, and the children are going to very good schools and all that, why should he take all these risks? I mean, you know, if they appear to the world to be completely normal, I don't know what you expect. I mean, you know, their wives know nothing, most times. They don't know anything at all about this. So it's a very hidden part. They appear to the world to be completely normal, and it's only one part of the personality, which is, of course, linked to the sexuality, which is at fault. So that part that is at fault is the one that appears in the execution of perversion. You can see also that in women with eating disorders, I mean, and the self-burning, self-cutting, and all that. They have an element to feed the voyeur, a sort of exhibitionistic behavior. And if you have ever been in a world of just anorexic girls, you will see that then when somebody goes in, it's a lot of attempts to uncover themselves to shock the other person with this very starving body. And then we can consider also that why do we always assume that somebody is pregnant and this is immediately equated to normality, to sanity? Why? Because we know also that women, they could be pregnant with many ideas in mind. One of them is to take revenge on the bloody bastard who, you know, treated me not that well, just to see. The other one could be, as we said before, to have somebody to love me. And all sorts of different motivations, conscious and unconscious too. So what happens at then, the baby becomes a sort of fetishistic object. What I mean, it's part of themselves. It's a fetishistic situation for them. So they can go from acts against themselves or against the object of their own creation, that is their babies. So they can go and do these terrible things to their children because they feel that they are in control. Of course, the moment they start doing, they notice that they are no longer in control. I am not talking now about the Munchausen syndrome by proxy, because in this particular situation, women are much more detached. They appear to be completely cold, detached, completely detached, not aware of what they are doing. Whereas in perversion, the mothers are very, very upset. Most times, they are extremely upset. And it's a phrase that comes all the time, is, if only I could put the clock back to before this happened. This is a very, men usually don't use these situations at all. Men are, when they, I mean, I think that in men it's very important that the age around the mid-30s, they may then appeal for help. And we have also self-referrals, although people just assume that they are all patients referred by the law or by other psychiatrists. Some of them are referred by themselves, and also women too. And women, they would say in the letters, I am in complete despair, I am pregnant again, and they have taken away my 4 children, and they are going to take away this one too. And so it is, I think that in a way, it is what I can see when I talk about, it's a chapter here called From the Court to the Couch. And this appeals very much to, let's say, somebody, okay, let's take the idea about, or the example of this, the flasher. The flasher then, you get a letter saying, you know, I'm in my mid-30s, I am now, I think that something is very wrong with me because I'm giving myself away. I said I want to be detected. I have been doing this since I was 11, 12. I have always managed to do this very cool, in a very cool fashion, and never to be detected ever. So people know what they are doing is wrong, but they cannot help themselves by doing it. As I was saying before, why should they choose to do this when they, you know, they could be at home? So then the idea is that when this man writes his letter, it is something to do with he's lost the coolness. So in other words, this could appear to be a good prognostic situation. It will take some time to tell the judge or the magistrate about this, but you can see that now this person is owning up his own psychopathology. He's saying, I am doing now in such a way that I'm giving myself up. I will be detected any minute. I am doing either in the same underground station at the same time, or the same woman, or with the car is being left there, that they can identify me. So it's something that now is very important. Okay, they must, if they have to face a penalty, they have to face it too, punishment. But you have also to remember that we have then to use a clinical situation. This clumsy operation has to do with their awareness of doing something wrong. Before that, they were untouchable, but now they are so vulnerable that they can, it's true, they are giving themselves away. So you have to explain this, perhaps the way it may appear for the first time in court, but they have been doing this for many, many years. And they knew from the age of 11 or 12 this situation, and then It's 1920. They meet the woman, the man falls in love, doesn't tell the future wife. He doesn't tell her because he feels that, it's gone. It is gone. So it starts operation, deception to the others, to the wife, or the future wife, and deception to oneself. So the situation of deception is very important. Although many times people don't take any notice about deception in perversion. Okay, the problem has gone. 9-10 months later, the problem reappears. And of course, by then, the person feels that it's too late, cannot let the partner know about this. So therefore, you are living with somebody and it's a facet of this person, a trait of his personality you don't know at all. So this is sort of, you know, it's the sort of what I call people who suffer from perversion. They are suffering. It's not they are having a bloody hedonistic life. No way. They are very much suffering, having to go again and again and again to the same situation. And as I say, one situation is that then they have to be caught in order then to accept the idea about treatment. So then is when they come. Other times, let's say, I want also to say that this has very little to do with morality. When I use the term perversion, I use it, it's a whole chapter about this here. I use it as a technical, psychoanalytical term, which I don't think that we're going to change that by calling paraphilia according to the DSM-4, because it's nicer to call paraphilia than perversion. I see that we have quite a very clear clinical picture that we can make the diagnosis of perversion, and we know exactly then that the only thing that's going to work would be a sort of analytical therapy, psychoanalytical therapy, either individual or in a group. Because that person will get to know what was, perhaps, after years, what was going on there. I mean, I had patients, they have seen a peer here, appears in another journal, which I call it Dancing with Death. Dancing with Death, because this man I saw, very handsome, very presentable, very good profession, his sport car, all what you want to know is there. Recently married, and they had moved houses, and to his wife's shock, they were then correspondence being forward to the new place, and then she sees that they are all journals to do with the rubber fetish, with all is indicating people who are suffering from this situation about rubber. Well, I mean, this is 1972 or 73 when I get married. I had no idea what she's talking about rubber. Of course, I didn't. What in my mind comes about is perhaps it's to do like the diving equipment, you know, or perhaps it's to do with this, or perhaps it's to do with that, and I go into all this, and then whatever I try to, no. Well, I was there when I used to go on Saturday to do the shopping in Soho with my son, who is here now, and he was very little then. I'm supposed to know, he was very small, and it was a shop of very good shop of Italian food. So they knew me. So I said, can I just leave? All the time, like now, you couldn't leave a child in anywhere for a few minutes. So I just went fast and quickly to the sex shop to see what on earth is this. And then I realized what it was. And that, okay, every Friday morning we have a clinical meeting with colleagues. So I said, well, it's a good thing that I didn't say that I was with my son. I said that I was on my own. I mean, I said, you know, I just wanted to know about this, and I went to the sex shop, and you would, what? Everybody got extremely angry, and immediately, interpretations, galore interpretations. I am in a counter transfers, I am already being the partner of the perversion. You see, you are the partner of the perversion, don't you see? And I was so angry. So, but then I had an inspiration. I said, okay, if you can let me know what was the quality of the rabbit, I would say that, yes, I was a partner to the perversion. Now, if you cannot tell me, I would say that my trip there was a research trip and that you should have it yourself too. Because I'm doing it not only for me, but all of you too, if nobody knows. So that I escaped from that one. So what it was, it's like a second skin. That's what it is like. It's a second skin that reminds me of the paper of Big. You know, it's a paper about the second skin. And then I realize about, of course, it's a lot about Didier Danzier that has written about the psychic envelopes and the very importance of the skin. So I was equipped with some other inside information that I didn't have before. So we were working and working with this man, and that point was very much a newcomer, so I had a very small consulting room there. Then I ended up with a big one. But anyway, this small consulting room, I began to feel one day, like it was like almost like a sort of like a womb, like an uterus situation. I began to feel very... So I said to him, because I also, at that point, I remember the interpretation that my first analyst had given me about my birth. And I was able to get to know because the midwife was alive, not my mother. And then I said to him, do you know, because before that, I thought, when I saw that was the other sort of rabbit, I began to think in terms of perhaps the mother must have had a sort of towels around, you know, whatever, to change her position. Actually, the patient told me that, you know, I said, this is a difficult one. It was a difficult one. I will ask my mother about this, but yes. Then he comes, this is 2 or 3 years afterwards, then he comes with information that, because the problem was, okay, I'm just trying to see which one is the better punchline. Because the problem is that this man, he even asked the wife, and the wife wanted to know, he asked the wife, and the wife was absolutely mortified and very angry. I said, if you don't get any bloody treatment, I will leave you. So that's when he came for treatment. And when I listened there, I listened in a different way, because this man required the whole thing, like obtaining a complete absence of any sensory perceptions. So even the head, the ears, everything. And at the point, everything was the second skin. At that point, in which he didn't know whether he would survive or not, he would have an erection, he would have an ejaculation, and that was then fine. Once a week, he had to go into this situation, to go to a special room, all that. And the poor guy had fought against this many times. I had, this was very, obviously was very expensive things, tools. Sometimes he had thrown them away, like a lot of transvestites are done too, and then again to buy again new ones because he cannot help but do it. Well, why should this man choose to do this instead of just getting on with the wife? He said, and then it was terrible. When we began to discover more and more things, he said, you know, we're watching the television in the living room, and then, I felt like making love to my wife and on the carpet. So I said to myself, well, that's okay. No, he said, because what we were watching on the television had nothing to do with any romance. It had to do with Houdini, the escapologist. That was going on in the rapids in Canada. After that is when I began to think in terms of what's going on here? Then I felt that situation too. So he went and asked his mother. He had been born 3 months earlier, and he was put in an incubator. And in the incubator, he was in between life and death for around 3 months too, until then He was there for 6 months after. So he was 6 months. So what he was trying to do is autoerotic asphyxia, as you may know the name by now, because funny enough, it was around the same time that the MP had killed himself accidentally, because with the apple in his mouth, and everybody thought it was very funny. With the apple in his mouth had to do with, again, not being able to breathe. And then I'm sure that the man didn't try to commit suicide, but suicide came into the world. He killed himself too. But as you can see, that example is just an example which goes to show that really it's not any space for morality in this. Because in this case, the man was going back to even before he was born, just at the time of his birth. So, to repeat the situation, which was life or death. Am I dying? And at that point, he would allow himself to have an erection, an ejaculation. Of course, he would do for the whole week with the wife, but he did need this dosage of autoerotic asphyxia once a week. I don't know whether... I'm going to another man, because I just also want to say a bit more about men, since otherwise it will be recognized only to do with women. A man again, he looks absolutely, I'm sure that if he stops any woman, he could hit anybody he wanted. No. He was sent to do a report to the court on a very funny charge. I won't tell you the charge, because the idea was that this man was in Oxford Street, he's stopping women, saying, oh, I'm a professional photographer, so I would like to take a picture of you because I think that you could become a fantastic model, a wonderful model. So the women, they all accepted. The vulnerability of women being told that they look wonderful with the stupid thing that they do. So she used to take them to the Churchill Hotel, and she used to there, sitting down there. And then he would say, but in order to have a precise idea about your body and all that, could you please take your clothes off and show me your breasts? All the women did it. And then he would passionately touch the breast, kiss the nipples and all that, and then he would be absolutely filled up with horror and remorse and would say, I'm so sorry, I'm not a photographer. Would you like, please, apologize. Would you like to have a cup of tea with me? And they all accepted this. All of them accepted to have a cup of tea. So when he comes on the charge, which actually it was not true, actually it was a sexual molestation or whatever. He said, I have never, no. And the charge actually, how was he seen? By the hotel detective for using a drug he was not paying for. So that was a charge. Fraud was a charge. You see, and there's a lot of deception there. You can see, why should he need a young, very, very, very presentable man having to do this? Can you imagine to have to? But then also you see the other side, something like, what sort of women? My mother or my sister would never do anything like that. So in other words, he was already then telling that they were absolutely stupid women, whatever, so the idea that they were forgotten and unforgiven, it was very bad, because people want to believe that they are very dangerous, and if they, it was in a way, or got what he wanted, but on the other hand, by getting what he wants, he also was then devoid of something else, so he had to go on again and again and again. I am going to stop here, and then I'll give you the chance, because otherwise I can go and talk forever, and I don't say it's very fair. So you ask a question.
Well, thank you, Stella. Let me help with the questions. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about your experience with setting up the unit within the courtroom that dealt with the mothers? I think it's such an important bit of history now. And it actually did change the way mothers and babies.
I had very much to do with the factor of a group therapy too. We initiated the group. I initiated all the group therapy at the clinic. they were not happy with that, because either they were psychoanalysts trying to work only with in one-to-one, or the group analysts who would say, oh, only one person like this, but not many more in the same group, because these people are untreatable. So everybody's always, you know, so the women, they began then to be able to talk, and then to be very much sort of the vehicles of their own voices, and to obtain a hearing too. Then I got my senior registrars working into the situation with the other assessment of the other person, and so then, you know, presented this, the whole case. It was Karin Min, who is now a consultant there. She was my senior registrar there, and then I had a young man from the TAVIC, who was a child analyst, and the three of us, we constituted this team to, we worked for 10 years on this, and we had pretty good results, in the sense that, I must say, sometimes I was surprised myself, because in 81 I started, as you can see, not by just by chance, because it's special, but I started the group that contained both victims and perpetrators of incest. So there were women who have been victims, men who have been victims, women who have been perpetrators, men who have been perpetrators. Not directly related, of course, what I mean. So this was really dynamite. That's actually for playing with dynamite, because it is very hard. At the beginning of the sessions, people just, I learned so much from them. I learned so much. I learned, for example, the enormous difference that exists between any sex perpetrator and pedophile. It's quite a different clinical case altogether. And the family dynamics is very important. So we were offering by the group, we were offering this situation too. I have seen women who after 7 or 8 years, they have even got back the children. I mean, and even one of them who got back all the children, the first one was around 15. And you see, sometimes women, we would like to, women and men, I assume, that we don't want to sound like our parents in the way that it did sound, so punishing and so awful, and we don't want to repeat that, and sometimes we are surprised to hear our parents' voices inside ourselves, and we say, oh, how can I say this? Well, this woman had been sexually abused by everybody, including her stepfather was the first, then the teacher, everybody who was supposed to be taking care of her had abused her. Now, what she did was to take this oldest child at the age of 6 or 7 to be babysat by her mother and her stepfather. And she couldn't hear when the child was telling her that her grandfather was doing something. He was giving her the bath, and one day she would listen for the first time, and she said she has begun to hit her head against the wall. She was so angry, she saw everything in red, and then she immediately came for treatment. She said, and when the time came that she got all these children back, she said, I won't help, I don't think I can manage this, because it's too much has been going on. Of course, we were very welcoming to the older one all the time, but I don't think it was a good idea for her or for me to have her at home, which I thought was such a wise decision that it's a very... requires a lot of maturity to give up, even a sort of bravado, no? That I want to take care of all my children. We didn't accept us, as she couldn't do in that case. No? Another woman was a victim of both mother and father. And the mother was really, well, I call this a malignant bonding, it's a chapter here. There is a woman who was a flasher herself. So she had learned herself that she had this situation since she was a child. She would just open, and then she had been brought up with 5 other siblings, and the 6th, they had the same treatment. The mother used to masturbate them all, because in this case it was easier to do that than to give them a dummy. And on the other hand, also she was getting some sense of sexual excitement too. Now, it was all very sort of always in community. So this woman was sent to a convent. And when she then, and the mother superior appeared, she then did that, do this. And then my superior lost her temper and just slapped her in the face. And then she realized that actually that is what she wanted. That is what she wanted. So then all what she was looking for was a repetition of this, which, and she had always the idea about coming into most hidden places, like there are the doctor's consulting rooms, there are the doctor's houses, all that, because she felt that she had the rights to do this, since somebody had interfered with her very early in life. So, so in a way, this was the victim of that sort of situation, and as opposed to other people, for example, she just decided that she, her scope for therapy was to be able to work well, because in work situation she had had a lot of problems, and she said, I will never have a relationship with anybody, so I don't want to pursue that. But you know, I think it's very important to respect also the scope that the patient have about how much they want to, what they can achieve too.
Any questions? Yes.
Well, first of all, thank you for this very interesting talk. I would like to ask, in terms of changes that psychoanalysis has been able to bring about in these people, you say that they were able to understand why this was happening to them and why they were feeling and acting in this way. But did it actually make them be able to change their way of thinking?
Once that they get to know into the awareness, yes. Because that is seeing them demolish the whole situation. They haven't, they're acting out what is giving them. And I call it dancing with death, because in a way it was death. And also the perversion requires the use of the body, not just the, anybody can have any fantasy that doesn't qualify for perversion. But once that you have, and these people want to get rid of this too, but they cannot come to terms with what is moving them to do this. And so when they went, we started in this situation, like with this man, as soon as he began to see all the revelations about it, then of course he was not any longer in need to create this, because that was a sort of like a jigsaw that he had been able together to place all the things together, so he didn't need any more to do this. Yeah.
Well, what's happening with a patient who has been very severely abused, I've seen it a couple of times, three times, by father, by stepfather, by a clown, by whatever. Mm-hmm. She gets married and marries this particular security man for, and her children are abused by that man too. And I see it so many times. What's happening there when it repeats? And the woman says, I would always know if it was happening to my child.
Well, I think that this is sort of a radar that is operational. And it's very, as I talk about the malignant body here, I call it the malignant body because it's something like a radar that is putting people together. And they have had, I assume that this woman has been victim also of sexual abuse.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm sure he's been also victim of sexual molestation or whatever, or incest or whatever. So they get together, and when they get together, they know, in their own ways, they know that they are in a sort of taboo situation. Mm-hmm. But once that it begins to appear more and more into the open, that they are, then sometimes they appeal. They don't have any more the sense of taboo, excitement of the taboo. So then sometimes they start attacking their children too. And that's what it is, that they get a lot of sexual excitation by doing that. Their children, well, it's people's children. But I mean, it's a terrible case, because one of the most terrible things is that a lot of times they are also videoing or recording. And this, if you remember how was Maya Hindley, how was she found out that she was responsible? Because of the recording of the voices of the children. And the children were saying, Maya, please, please. So that is what put her into the situation of being really from the, whatever the woman most loaded in the UK. Then you I mean, 2 years ago, I always look at things like this. You see, okay, to be a forensic psychotherapist, you have to read all the forensic news in the newspapers. Because as soon as I go to give a lecture somewhere else, I mean, in Italy, I read the papers and I take it there. Because, and they cannot say anymore. This only happens in England because of all the English women, etc., etc. I say, no, here too. There is a local paper that is talking about this. For example, a couple that they were babysitting, a baby 3 months old, they were raping the baby, and they had taken videos. So it's like, it's not enough. They have to recreate the situation time and time and time again to be in the situation of power. But this is a very, very difficult one. Yeah.
So how can you work with that, Estrella?
Well, let's say, if they are prepared to come after the appearing in court or whatever, a woman, for example, realized that then she had married a pedophile. Now, that's very, also again, it's very, sometimes it will deal with the situation about separation, or women who are in very sadomasochistic relationships with partners who are very brutal, and sometimes, because I forgot to mention that sometimes this is part of also, the woman is now unconsciously attaching that situation of hurting herself in a man. So the man starts in being very brutal to the woman. And that's what happened in the 60s with the creation of the shelters or whatever. Then they began to feel outraged, the people in charge, because these women then were back to this person, or the new person would eventually behave exactly the same way. So in this sort of situation, the wife pattern syndrome, we have to look at different layers that they are putting these two together, because something is going on there which is providing both of something that they unconsciously are in need of. I mean.
But what do you do?
What do you do? Okay. In the case of, for example, a woman who, I mean, she was taking the children to the stables with the horse and all that. Her husband was working there. She had met the husband. And then, again, can you imagine that he said to her, she didn't show any interest sexually to her, but he said, you know what would be nice? If, and they had children, by the way, if you, why don't, we didn't use our own child, you use another child from the stable. If then you are touching the nipples of these young girls and you try then to seduce them, because I think that will give me a lot of sexual excitement and then I can operate again. What do you want? Well, you can be very beautiful, but you can be even more beautiful if you, again, going the placing of the situation and then depending on that. And then she felt that, you know, she said, you know, I'm a bloody idiot. I felt that I was in a film. I was a star of a film. And, of course, and that was there to prove that she was part of that. Well, she left her husband, for example. She left her husband. I mean, she was in a group. And the child had not been touched. I don't know. But, I think that sometimes the only way is just to separate, because it's explosive.
So you have to break them
yeah,
involved.
Question
there.
Could you tell us a bit more about how these innovative groups that you were introducing, how they would work?
Well, for example, when I talk about this taboo situation in which is established about a man and a woman, I always remember it. I was very young then. I was thought I was somebody who was very old because it was in the 60s. My God. So I put, this man comes. I had a patient who had been a victim of incest for 14 years of her father. 14 years. So, she was already in the group. A new person comes who the daughter decided 20 years later to denounce him because of this. And then, I mean, a lot of the men who have been perpetrators of incest, they are really, I don't say, they are cynics. I said, they really mean that they were not aware they are causing these tremendous problems in their offspring. Sometimes I think that it's only, you know, complete denial. sort of only something physical, but you know, they are very surprised when they see women in their 40s with still the same. So in this case, the man sat several days, and then it's very hard for somebody who comes for the first time in an already established group, first to find his own place, but even much harder to change the chair and to go to some other chair. And then he goes and sits next to my patient, the woman. And I fell inside myself, what the hell is he trying to do to my baby? Mm. And then he says to her, you know what, I'm very, very hard of hearing, and I can see that you will talk very softly, so I have next to you to listen to what you have to say. She had not even said a word yet. But wasn't that operating this radar, putting this together? Then, this woman who had never told anybody about the 14 years, well, I learned a lot from that. So, the man comes, the man was there before, actually, who had committed incest with actually was a stepdaughter. And this we learned long way after, perhaps 7 or 8 years after group therapy, that actually this had been the outcome. You always have to look at family dynamics in incest. You cannot just see one apart from the other. This had been the outcome of their own baby, him and his wife, death. He had a cold death. We didn't know this when he started. We didn't know for a long time. They had a very, very passionate and very sort of explosive relationship. And so they had a big fight. He left, and then only when she got in touch with him, the baby had died. So actually, he had all the time thought that she was conscious and unconsciously guilty of that. But she went through pathological mourning in the way of not completely being absent. And he went exactly on the opposite. Because the two of them, almost like the stepdaughter, also she was in need of some sort of reassurance and some sort of warmth, but became a physical and sexual one. So this man, who when the first time I saw him, he appeared to be very, very, very arrogant and very pedantic, and I didn't like him. When he got into the group, this woman came after, and she said one day, you know, I couldn't see a program on television that was about incest, that was actually was, what's her name, our friend, I don't remember his name. He was in Panorama doing this program, and Benami was, okay. Why? Because my father rang me up. But my father lives in the country. Yes, he rang me up at 8 o'clock and he finished at 9 o'clock. Why didn't you tell him that you had something else to do? You are letting your father fuck you. That's what you're doing. This was the first time that she just went like an animal, a wounded animal. A few months later she came back saying, you know, I had a terrible weekend. I went to my parents, even though I had told them that I was a vegetarian. My father prepared for me especially a breakfast of bacon and sausages, and I had to eat it. I recently ate it. And this again, this man went completely crazy, and then she began to be aware. So that is in the way that is working, in which the victims also, they have to become aware about their own participation, which is not that they are consensual. There's nothing to do with that. There's something there. Some of them, when they face them, then they, because the group offers them also a relationship with siblings, and they never had it, because that person has been absolutely told that she cannot tell anybody they're sick. No, nobody. So all the other siblings, and sometimes when they come for treatment and they go to tell the sibling, you know that my father, oh, he did the same to me, but I told him no. So what equips somebody to say no? And so you have to look much more at what it makes them be responding to the situation. I really feel very strongly about mixing them together, because I think that, for example, I noticed that with victims, I did with this woman, I felt, oh, I could not say her to anyone, not even the best of my colleagues. No, I understand her so well. And I was, metaphorically speaking, I was already in a situation of incest with her. So, so groups. And then it's very interesting because people would say, you know, why a group? And then you have a modification of technique and all that, preparation for the group, etc., etc. But they realize that this is very, when at the beginning they would say, are you crazy or what? I don't want to be. No. I mean, this man told me, you're mad or what? I mean, that was a time in which then he had complained to the medical society about the doctor who had said about this problem, the incestuous situation. He had complained to his MP. He has complained to everybody at that point with the doctor. We had to keep confidentiality. And also I learned that confidentiality sounds like a very nice word, but actually it was a bloody dirty secret. Because I had to feel with him like he was either I was reacting like a consenting child or I was very, very sadistic. So I realized also that the group, and he told me you're crazy or what, and he added some few other nice things. But I mean, I just said, you know, that's the only treatment I can offer to you, and I think that that's absolutely the adequate one. If you want, let's go and think about that. 3 weeks later, he came to say, I have been thinking, and I want to take on the offer, so go on. Come 7 years later, whatever, when he talked about leaving the group, I thought, oh my God, how am I going to work without him? Because he had become such a fantastic member of the group. And so, how can you put this in a form, of a research form, that this patient has made such an enormous change that you, in the counter transfers, experience this 180-degree change yourself? I don't know. That's the problem about analytical therapy. It's very hard to be able to prove anything. I mean, if you had not gone, what happened? I don't know.
Okay, we'll take last question.
Can I ask you about age of consent? Is there a scientific way of setting that? And how can it be coordinated with other countries? So, because we are now a global society, and I'm a bit worried about some tendencies coming. I'm a refugee from Iran.
Yeah.
And in Iran, it's actually legal by Islamic law.
Abuse
a 9-year-old kid, calling her a wolf. Actually, it was documented by a British journalist who made a documentary about a divorce court in Tehran. And she asked this so-called judge, this priest, the age of consent, and he just said, yes, it's 9 for girls. Okay. So,
because it's the legal age to get married.
Yes, and it happens. And
but you see, was a bit of...
And the other thing is France, the age of consent, as I think it's 13. Anybody knows?
No, it's 15.
Is it 15 now? It's like Denmark is 15 as well. But in a way to, I'm a medical professional myself, in a way to be able to convince all that, hey, we need to protect this age of consent.
Well, and if you are in Italy, you are being seduced by the prime minister, or the president, or the prime minister, so.
Basis for child development and psychological development and physical development of children, or is it just a legal matter?
It's a legal matter to you.
Only?
I just don't know. For example, the Pedophile Association, somebody went to journalists and got to know that the pedophiles were trying to change the law, consenting children to the age of 4. I mean, you can see then how the mad situation of mind of a pedophile. But I think that it is very, very difficult because you can see, I mean, I have seen people of 24 who are like little adolescents, little children, and some other of 15 who behave in a sort of mature way. So it's very difficult to make this. But of course, it should go to 17. The problem is that then also with gay situation, they push also because the gay people wanted to have it much lower, in the sense of not getting into trouble, too. So, I mean, there are always legal implications, always. And as you say, Iran had to do with that. I mean, with the fact that they can get married. So it's another legal situation. I don't think that is, because at some point it was to do with the first menstrual period, too. That is also...
Well, again, you define perversion not based on morality, then we need to have another base for defining perversion as a crime, for example. So can psychoanalysis, can it contribute to set that in the context of age of consent? So if a person has done, you know, has had sex with child at that age, mm. this is perversion.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yes.
So probably, oh, yes. Anyway, I would urge actually the community to try to.
Absolutely. Fight. But I think that we have to fight for that, yeah. We have to have our own voices to be heard too, yeah.
Well, yeah, I just say that in the case of Iran, it's about property rights because the girl is actually the parent's the father's property and she is handed over to the husband. So that's rather different from consent, isn't it?
But again, but, I mean, Iran was a secularized country until recently, so that shows you that anybody can find an arbitrary way to
exactly.
make it. Yeah. And what I'm worried about is that EU, by you know, the device of, can you say, openness, tolerance, actually allows pedophiles to convert to Islam and say that's our religion. And then we have a problem. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay, I'll take one more very quickly.
Thanks very much. I think you briefly alluded to a distinction between
yes.
Pedophilia and incest.
I think that pedophiles are extremely difficult people to treat, extremely difficult, because there are so many different variations of symbolisms inside themselves. They are the mother that they never had, they are the child that they would like to be there, all sorts of things. And sometimes, and they are very, very resistant to any treatment, they will be coming all the time, on time, they will be absolutely bad. The patients in a group, they said, no. This, they have the same problem, but this reacts in a different way than this one. And then I began to be aware about the difference between incest perpetrators and pedophiles. And by the way, there can be also a problem about some people who may appear as pedophiles. There are a lot of women who are housebound, and they have been, or they have a lot of children, and they have been left by their partners. They put an advert in the, it used to be the in the Time Out, Lonely Hearts column. I'm this and that, and I have all, and they would give lots of details about the children because they felt like, well, these men, they have left me because of the children, all the demands and this and that. So if I put all the details, well, what? That was a fantastic thing for a pedophile to go to that house. In no time, perhaps they got married. Now, the investment that this woman had put into all that, and she sees that this man is so nice to the children, it's lovely. I mean, never mind, he hardly ever notices me, but he's so nice, etc., etc. It will be very difficult for her to accept and to admit that he's a pedophile, or to look into the possibility of this man being a pedophile. And then it may appear then that this is incest, when actually it's not incest, it's a pedophile in a sort of disguise as an incest perpetrator. You want us all out, no?
That's all I want you out of, Estella. I'm very happy to go on if you're feeling up to it. Are you? Do you want to?
No, I don't want to. I don't want to bore everybody more.
No, not everyone's bored. Yeah. What, I was simply going to say that, you know, certain of the things that you've talked about tonight are there in the book, and particularly, I think, describing the group dynamics.
It's very hard
to do when you're just standing up and chatting, and I really do recommend that you have a look at Playing with Dynamite. I want to thank Estella hugely on behalf of the museum, because she's been a great and long-term friend of the museum as well. And,
Thank you for giving me this chance. Thank you very much.
On the new book. And also to say, for those of you who are interested, there are still a few days left to take part in the Freud anniversary art auction. And all around you are all these wonderful pictures, some of them by extremely well-known artists. And you may want to pick up a catalogue. There's still time to shop. What did you say?
We have books in the shop.
And Estella's books are in the shop. Sorry, and she'll be happy to sign them and indeed to chat to you individually.
And also, I just want to say before it's over, first of all, thank you, and thank you, Carol. Thank you very much for inviting me and my current Rita. I just want to say that I want to talk now about my organization, because we have our next meeting will be in Venice, and the title is very, we had the title even before the Rupert Murdoch situation, the title is Corruption, Collusion and Deception, Attacks on the Mind. So that will be in at the end of March in Venice, so you're all very much welcome, and if you have any paper to even abstract, do please.
And Estella will be speaking at the Freud Museum Conference on Love, which I will chair and present to you.
Until we send you her own book, All About Love.
I think on the 3rd of December, yes?
Yeah.
Where is that? So please, you can hear more.
The Saturday.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Estella.